are now joining The Mandalorian Watch.
That's right. It's the number one podcast in the galaxy for all things The Mandalorian. I am your host, Alex Maxwell, and joining me, as always, is...
Mac Lacey. And Alex, we are doing something very special today. This is not going to be a normal run-of-the-mill episode of The Mandalorian Watch. You've probably already read the title. I'm sure it's in there, or slash description. I don't know how we could get around that. So, you probably know what this is already. But, yeah, what are we doing here?
We are interviewing Emily Swallow, who is the armorer on The Mandalorian.
Yes. This is so exciting. Spoiler alert, it's already happened. So this is this is post-interview.
Yeah.
It was such a good conversation. I could have kept going all night. Yeah, she has great insight, and she's just a really interesting individual. So, I think you're going to like this.
It's definitely something that I think you should tune in for. If you're into the behind-the-scenes type things for The Mandalorian, especially if you really enjoy the gallery episodes, this episode is for you. This interview, we get into a lot of things that kind of go on behind the scenes on the set. And just really what's really cool too is just her previous experience with Star Wars before The Mandalorian and stuff. So there's just a ton of cool things. And of course, we have a little discussion about season 2 and potentially season 3 at the end of the interview too. So it's a great discussion.
Yeah. For sure. Well, let's go ahead and roll that and get right into it, and then we'll be back afterwards.
Today we have with us Emily Swallow, a well-known actress known for her roles as Kim Fisher in The Mentalist and Amara in Supernatural. She also portrays maybe one of the coolest characters in all of Star Wars, the armor. Emily, we are so happy that you're with us today.
I'm so happy to be here.
Awesome. Well, hey, so one thing we like to do kind of to open things up and get to know somebody, a little bit better. We like to ask, so before obviously, becoming the armorer, taking on the role and everything, what was your relationship to Star Wars before that?
Yeah, there's no point in my life that didn't have Star Wars, because I was born during the time like the first three were coming out, and it was just like woven into the fabric of my childhood. I mean, I was not old enough to see the first movies in the theater, but at some point I got to see them. And then I remember playing like Ewok Adventures in the backyard, and of course wanted to be Princess Leia and all of that. So it was just always sort of a given that Star Wars was there, and that it was something that kept like drawing me back. And as I got older, I kept up with the prequels and then the sequels, but did not know the depth and breadth of the universe that I have now been exposed to. Prior to doing The Mandalorian, I hadn't seen Clone Wars. I hadn't seen Rebels. And I am just constantly made aware of how much I still don't know, because it's incredible to me. And I mean, it makes sense. The original movies came out over 40 years ago, but the inspiration that has continued is incredible to me. And the books that have been written and the animated shows and all the little offshoots are just, it's thrilling. And now, I mean, one of my friends was joking, like, it's just too bad that Disney's not really taking advantage of the Star Wars acquisition. They're just not doing anything with it. I mean,
hey, listen, I'm ready for you to get your own show called just The Armor. I'm ready for that one.
When they came out with like 10 different spinoffs, I was like, wait a minute, I'm a little hurt.
So, to go around. Yeah. It's really cool that you say that, is because like what I've noticed too is with a lot of fans of The Mandalorian have your same story with, in terms of like when they're watching The Mandalorian, it's kind of opened their eyes to a whole world of Star Wars that maybe they haven't engaged with yet. And now they're starting to engage with it because of the show. So I thought that was really, really cool. But we want to kind of ask you too, what was your process for choosing the best way to bring the armorer to life?
I love answering that question because it's one of the most interesting character creations that I feel like I've had, because it started with me knowing next to nothing about what I was getting into. Like, even the audition itself, I knew maybe had something to do with Star Wars, but, you know, there prior to that, there'd been no live action Star Wars TV shows. So I didn't know. And of course, on streaming, it's hard to know immediately, like, if something is a big deal or not, which I was so happy for, because it was such a boring audition just in terms of, like, the stakes of it. And I'm so grateful for that, because I probably would have been completely nervous. But I knew that this character might show up in one or more episodes, that she would be masked the whole time. They made sure I knew that, because I guess some people, you know, might not want to, they want to show their beautiful face. I had no problem with that. It was kind of a relief. And I was, the only information I was given is that she was the Zen leader of a clan of people who were in hiding. And that was it. And in the course of the audition, which was also so low key, it was just me and a casting associate in a room with the camera. Like, there was nobody involved with the production at any point. I just had one audition. He suggested, you know, he gave me some little adjustments and gave me a little more very vague information that would help with the scene. And then asked me to do it with a British dialect because they'd been seeing a lot of Brits. So just in case. And so that's how that happened. And I think that sort of stuck, just because it, I think that John liked that it kind of set her apart from everybody else. And so he encouraged me to keep some semblance of that. But, I didn't get a script or anything. Like, I found out I got it and I was still, and at that point I knew it was something Star Wars, but still knew so little that I was like, okay, maybe this is cool. And it wasn't until I got to my first costume fitting that I realized, oh, wow, okay, this is going to be really spectacular. Because I went to Legacy Effects, this studio out in the Valley in Los Angeles, and they started, like, taking all these measurements, and they did this, like, plaster of Paris cast of my torso, but I hadn't seen anything, so I didn't know what anything was going to look like. And then they realized I hadn't seen anything, because they were talking to me about all this stuff and they were like, oh, you don't know anything, do you? And I said, no, I know nothing. So they showed me some sketches and it just took my breath away. And then as I went back for subsequent fittings and saw this costume come together, that just did so much for me to understand kind of the epic size of this character. And then a few days before we started shooting, I finally got to talk with John and with Dave, and they really encouraged me to look back at some of the things that George Lucas had originally used for inspiration, like Kurosawa films, and just that, for that level of kind of formality and that regalness, and that helped a lot. But then it was really just like, I was fortunate that I was in the first episodes that we were shooting, because it shot all out of order, but we did 1 and 3 at the same time. So Dave Filoni and Deborah Chow were directing those, and we kind of just, like, learned on our feet how these masked and armored characters needed to communicate on camera. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of trial and error and a lot of experimenting. And I had done some mask work for theater before, but that's very different because, you know, when you're on camera, the audience isn't seeing your entire body the whole time. Sometimes they're not seeing you at all. Sometimes they're just seeing your mask. And so it was really interesting to see what translated and what didn't. And it was kind of cool to play a character who doesn't reveal much, because it meant I didn't really have to worry as much about being perfectly clear in all of my communication. Yeah. And that was just really fun. And then I guess the final piece of it was that I didn't truly understand what an integral part she was of his journey until I watched it, because I didn't really know anything about the episodes I wasn't in. You know, I had the scripts for the episodes I did, but everything was just so under wraps. I was like, I'm only in 3 episodes. I'm only in a few scenes. It seems like I'm not that big a deal. Oh. So then at the end to, like, see, oh, yeah. Jenna, yeah. What? Yep. It was pretty exciting.
Yeah, it is really exciting.
I think you ended up being a little bit big of a deal. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's really interesting, just kind of hearing about, you know, the process of coming up with how the character behaves and sounds and everything. What differences, like, working on Star Wars have you noticed as opposed to, like, working on other stuff? Like, you were talking about kind of a lot of the experimentation and stuff like that. Is there anything unique about working on a Star Wars production?
I don't think that that's unique to Star Wars. I think that it's unique to Jon Favreau and the way that he assembled this team. Because one of the things that struck me from the start was how collaborative and generous everybody was. And I noticed, you know, just in the episodes I worked on, he had chosen directors who were very unique in their styles. But he was so great at he and Dave both were so great at just unifying everybody, making sure everybody was telling the same story and still encouraging everyone to draw on those unique talents, that I think people were really able to shine in a way that served the story in the best possible way. And, it was just such a collaborative, generous environment. Mm. I mean, everyone, and you could kind of feel like this undercurrent. This was, I think, unique to Star Wars, this little undercurrent with everybody of like, oh my gosh, we're getting to play Star Wars every day. You know, yeah. It's like a dream come true for everyone. But given what I know now, just about like how much money was put into it and continues to be put into it and how kind of like how big a deal it is, it stands out even more to me that it was just so collaborative and that everyone is so... There wasn't a lot of ego. Everyone was very giving and really concerned about just doing the best work they could to tell this story. And that was a beautiful thing. And I think that, you know, I've been on other projects that are like that, but I think that the heart of Star Wars was really served in that way. And mm-hmm. so that was a real pleasure to get to see.
Absolutely. There is a specialness to Star Wars, I think, that, you know, when people approach it, you just kind of, like you said, you kind of feel it. Is there anything that, like, just when you were on set, what was one of your most memorable moments or a memorable story from your time on set with The Mandalorian?
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind wasn't when I was actually on set, but it was when I was at the studio, and I, you know, like I was saying, I knew so little about, if I wasn't working in a scene with somebody, I didn't know they were in it. So as like press releases came out, I was like, oh, I had no idea I was in a show with like Nick Nolte. And but I remember walking down the hall of all of our dressing rooms one day, and I saw Giancarlo Esposito's name. Ooh. And I freaked out because I'm just such a huge fan of his, as are, I mean, so many people, because of Breaking Bad and the other incredible work that he's done. And I never worked with him, but like, I remember that day when I saw his name and I was so excited that he was involved with it. But for me, you know, I had a different experience from a lot of people because I got to have a set that was all... it was all tangible for the most part. You know, there were some of the special effects, like in the forging sequences that they put in afterwards, but I never worked with the green screen. I never had to really like make believe much, except for like IG-11 and, you know, mm-hmm. some of that stuff. But even then there was a person standing there. Yeah. And then they did all the animation on top of it. But I really appreciated the care that was put into all of the little details in the armorer's forge. And my tools were exquisite. And the level of craftsmanship and the care that was put into that meant a lot. And there was a blacksmithing consultant that was there on the days that I was doing those forging sequences, which was great because, you know, it's just when you have somebody who knows what they're doing, who's looking on, to make sure you look like you know what you're doing. It just adds another level of confidence that I really appreciated, and that they cared enough about it to take the time to do that meant a lot. But I think, I mean, it sort of felt like each day was this, like I was opening more Christmas presents as I got to see like all the cool things that I got to play with. I definitely would like to have some of the Armorer's toys.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. We would also like to have those. Yeah. So, you know, just we missed you a lot in season two.
So much.
Yeah. And we are, of course, hoping for the return of the Armorer in season three. Got our fingers crossed for that. But just as a fan, what were your thoughts on season two? Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It blew my mind because I knew nothing about what was going to happen. In the first few episodes, you know, I was like, okay, this is interesting. This is cool. But it sort of felt like it got off to a little bit of a slow start. Mm-hmm. Which I now looking back, I'm like, well, that was probably entirely intentional. But to see, oh my gosh, I was so excited to get to see Bo-Katan and, oh, sorry, I just had a pop-up that came up on my screen.
All good.
Oh, what's happening? Oh, wait, You're good. Okay. to see Bo-Katan, to see Ahsoka, it was amazing to me that, because I feel like there is this, what must be a very challenging task of having this story that you want to tell, knowing that there's a lot of expectations from fans and characters that they would like to meet, and needing to sort of marry the two of you know, what are your individual ideas for the story, and then what can you also do that kind of answers people's pleas, I guess. And I just thought that I feel like my awe for Jon Favreau just grows constantly. Because it just, you know, knowing that Boba Fett would be on there was like, okay, that'll probably be pretty cool. But then, like, that character exceeded anything I expected and was so much more interesting than what I even anticipated.
Yeah.
And I love that the show is not afraid to, I think there's this great patience with the storytelling. I mean, as we've seen, because of, like, when Fennec got what we thought she got killed in season one, we knew absolutely nothing. And then all of a sudden she comes back halfway through season two. Like, to be patient enough to use the storytelling that way, and to be specific enough to reveal all these complex details about these characters, it just, I feel like season two was even better than season one. And I'm very excited to see what's going to happen with season three.
So are we. Like, to me, I think it, like, the question that pops into my mind is, do you think the Armorer would get along with Bo-Katan? Like, do you believe there might be some conflict between those two characters just in their viewpoints on Mandalore and Mandalorians?
I'm laughing because a number of people have speculated things about that I've seen online. And Emily, who has such respect for Katie Sackhoff and who loves that character, I'm like, of course we could get along. We'd be great. But also, Emily did not know until this season that the Armorer is part of this cult. So I honestly don't know. I like to think of a world where Mandalorians from different backgrounds can, you know, come together in a common goal. But because there's obviously so much more to the galaxy than I really know, I don't know. I mean, I could also see how there might be some conflict there around the Darksaber. And I don't know how that's going to play out now that he has the Darksaber, but he doesn't really want to fight over it. But he can't just give it away, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. I'm excited to see it. And of course, we hope that the Armorer shows back up in season three, because you were one of our favorite characters in the entire show. So we did really miss you in season two.
For sure. The Armorer just goes such a long way of bringing mystery and intrigue into the Mandalorian lore. It's just, it was a perfect addition. So,
thank you.
Pointed question. It's kind of an inside joke amongst our listeners and us and everything. Do you think Mandalorians have to be human?
Oh.
So there's a lot. So do you think we generally see humans as Mandalorians, but do you think it has to be that way?
I don't think so. Because I think, I mean, given the fact that, like, we take in, you know, you don't have to be born into being a Mandalorian.
Right.
So I feel like that sort of opens it up, not just to foundlings who are humans, but I don't know. What do you guys think?
What Mac is trying to ask is basically, is there anything to the horns on the armor's helmet?
Oh, see, I didn't even know you were. Honestly don't know the answer to that.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. All right.
Cool.
That's not
cool.
A no, though, everyone.
It's not. Emily doesn't know enough.
I don't know. Yeah, right.
Cool. Yeah, I have a personal theory that the armorer might be a Zabrak, which is like okay. Darth Maul's species. That's why she's got the...
I have heard that.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see.
Find out.
Yeah. Well, hey, our time is coming short. We'd really appreciate you talking with us. This has been amazing. But first, we really want to know, you know, other than... hopefully future Mandalorian appearances. What else do you have going on? Like what else can people find you in or where can they follow you online? Just anything you're doing.
Thanks for asking. Yeah. Well, the thing that I've been shooting most recently is so completely different from the Mandalorian. Cause I've been working on, SEAL Team. It's a show on CBS, cool. Which I was on last season and back again this season. So that's the most current thing, but I'm on Instagram, I'm sort of on Twitter, I forget about Twitter a lot, but I do try to respond to people, and I love when people, like, tag me in pictures of their cosplay or in their fan art or anything, so please feel free to do that, and my handle on Instagram and on Twitter is Biggie Swalls, which is BIGESWALLZ, so if people want to look for me there, I'm not always the best at keeping up with the social media, but I try because I'm so inspired by what people create. And I actually, thanks to a fan who builds stuff for cosplay, I have an armorer helmet.
Nice.
Cool.
Yeah. It's not in the city where I currently am, but I haven't started traveling with it yet, although many people have suggested that I just use it as my mask on the airplane.
There you go.
That would be cool. Yeah, that would be cool.
Can avoid the ear fatigue that way, probably.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Emily, thank you so much for your time today. This has been just absolutely a delight.
Highlight of my year, guys.
All right. Well, we will hopefully see you in The Mandalorian in the future. But until then, I'll tell you and then all the listeners, keep the watch. We told you.
So good.
Okay. It was good. It was really fun. Emily, thank you so much again. Just incredible conversation. Super fun. So,
I love that you tried to go around asking if she was a Zabrak or not.
Look, but, I didn't want to just... I was playing it a little close to the vest. Didn't want to just put everything out there.
Our listeners knew
you
what
know.
You were doing, though.
Right.
They
right,
knew exactly
right.
what you were doing.
Of course. I mean, I couldn't not bring it up, right? I mean,
that's like your thing, dude. Like the armor is a Zabrak. Like that should be a t-shirt that you have.
Yeah, it's one of the longest running bits I think we have, but it's not really a bit. I actually kind of think that or hope
yes,
that.
Yes, since season 1, chapter 1. You've said
much.
This. Yeah, it's been over a year.
Yeah. I was super fascinated with just like learning how the process worked and how, you know, she came to the role and created the character and hearing about, you know, everything from like costuming to just everything was incredible.
It's just so cool too, just to hear how much she's a fan of this show as well. Like, I love that she got so excited about Giancarlo Esposito like we do, like, on the podcast.
Yeah, we got excited about Giancarlo
because he's amazing. That was really cool. And then just, I don't know, just the mental image in my head of the armor and Bo-Katan, Emily versus Katie. I like that idea in my mind. So hopefully, even if they don't have, like, a face-to-face interaction, their ideologies might be battling each other. And that's something exciting to think about potentially in the future.
Yeah, for sure.
If you get a chance, definitely give her a shout out on social media and just tell her how awesome she is, especially on the Mando watch. So
yeah, just express your gratitude for her, you know, killing it and bringing this character to life.
So. Absolutely.
Cool. Well, we're going to be rolling right into a Patreon bonus episode recording, I think. So I guess we should probably go ahead and get to that.
Yeah, and don't forget, the Beskies are coming February 7th.
Yeah. If you haven't heard yet, that is our award show for season 2 of The Mandalorian. We're going to be giving out some Beskar statuettes.
The armor.
That's it. Yeah. And then, yeah, so just tune in to see, you know, what takes. We've got best performance. We've got best VFX, best babysitter. That's my favorite category. Yeah. I'm very excited for it. So
best musical moment, best production design, all that stuff is on there. So we're going to treat it just like the Emmys or the Academy Awards. And remember, to access that episode on February 7th, you have to wear a tuxedo.
Correct. That is a required garment, regardless of
all genders.
Whatever. Everyone's in a tuxedo.
Tuxedo shirts work. We haven't figured out the algorithm on that, but if you wear a tuxedo shirt, it goes around it and you can access the episode that way.
Like I've said before, we don't make the rules. That's just how it is. So, all right. Well, we will see you at the Beskies. Man, we got to write a theme song or something for it. The Beskies.
Well, you know, I do know this guy who's in a band.
Award show. You know somebody who is a drummer in a band and bad at singing. So, cool. Well, see y'all then. Until then, keep the watch.